Hello and welcome to another episode of the Auto Trader Podcast. My name is Wandile Sishi.
And I am George Mini.
And we once again joined to talk about everything and all things cars. How was your weekend, George?
Very good. Glad we had a long weekend. I don't know why they have public holidays.
Like midweek.
In the middle of the freaking week.
Well, I mean, it's a set date. So to be fair, June 16 will always be June 16.
Can't we just make the public holiday laws to say if it falls on a Thursday, it then becomes a Friday, we do on a Sunday. Okay.
Yeah. So Monday becomes automatically.
Automatically, Monday's a holiday.
Yeah.
So we should have that kind of like, okay, if it's a Wednesday, it's actually a Friday.
But what if it's a historic date?
Well, fair enough. I mean, I don't know how to solve that problem. I'm just kind of like, it's stupid to have a holiday in the middle of the week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, long weekend's better.
Definitely. I definitely agree with that.
It helps with tourism.
It helps with tourism. It helps with mental, recuperating. And, you know, so I definitely agree with, you know, maybe start a petition and see if we can get the laws changed.
There's better things to change than public holidays. I think we've got too many. I'm going to be...
Too many public holidays?
Yeah.
Are you speaking as a CEO? Or are you speaking as...
It's not good for business, public holidays. It's good for tourism, not good for business.
George. Anyways, there was also the F1 that happened this week. And we went to Canada, which was yesterday, actually, yeah. Good race. Good race for us. Okay race for you.
Yeah, okay. I just feel like the team is letting Leclerc down.
Yeah. No, look, he had to get a new engine, so he did start at the back, but he did do well to kind of finish P5.
He did a stellar job. But so where I thought they let him down in that race was not pitting him under the first virtual safety car.
Okay.
They should have pitted him.
But he was running. Like, I think he was...
No, he was running, but imagine what he could have done. Maybe there was a reason. Maybe he would have come out in too much traffic or whatever the case may be. But when he got those new medium tires, when he did eventually pit, look how much faster he was.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But he did have less fuel. I mean, there's so many variables involved.
True. Yeah. But Hamilton on the podium, can you freaking believe it?
For the second time this season, and we can believe it because we've seen it over 100 times. So
I think George Russell gave him a get out of jail free card.
I don't think so. I think he just didn't convert on Saturday, therefore the man dropped the hammer again. So, you know, it happened.
Let's move on.
So, got a super interesting show today. A phenomenon which I think, you know, we've been seeing around. But before we get into that, I think it's important that we address... or conclude our three-part saga. Hopefully we conclude it today.
Don't know. Let's see.
Our trilogy. But if you didn't catch the last 2 weeks, please go back on our channel. You'll definitely find it there. But essentially, we were digging into...
Yeah, exactly. Stop right now because you need to know the backstory to this.
Okay, let's just stop.
Yeah. Stop right now. Go back. Watch the last two episodes and then come watch this one.
Yeah, because I think it's definitely built up and we didn't know it was going to happen like this, but it just did. And... thank heavens it did, and thank goodness we keep asking these questions.
Well, we've learned some stuff now, right?
Definitely. Yeah. But essentially, we came across the point that in some instances, the brakes of an ICE vehicle and an EV car are not necessarily the same price. And then in last week's episode...
Well, we used the Jaguar as the example, exactly. Which wasn't quite fair because it was two different Jaguars. It was the I-Pace versus the... E-Pace did we use?
What, no, I think it was the Range Rover Sport.
Range Rover Sport.
Yes.
Which are two totally different vehicles.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was fair that we compared those two, but it sent us down this rabbit hole.
For sure. And also, we didn't know the technology that underpins it. So more things were needed to be taken into consideration before we can really have a full understanding of the scenario. So with that being said, you last week asked if we can reach out to our friends at Volvo. Mm.
Because they've got identical cars.
Because they have an identical ICE and battery electric vehicle, as well as hybrid, but it's not in South Africa, where we can actually go and find out what's the lowdown on this.
And I mean, thank you to Volvo.
Yeah, thank you to our friends at Volvo. And they did come back. They did come back with you know, exactly what we asked for. So essentially, the XC40 battery electric hybrid, as well as the...
XC40 ICE. Yes.
All share the exact same platform. And... share the exact same parts. So on that vehicle or this model, the brake pads are exactly priced the same and it's the exact same parts.
That's interesting. So let's do this. I'm going to Google XC40 ICE vehicle's weight, which is how much does this thing weigh? XC40 ICE.
Could you not find this on the... Wait. Let me see. I think I have it here.
How much does the XC40...
The assumption there, though, is that the battery electric and the hybrid is going to be a little bit more heavier.
Well, I want to see. So the XC40 seems to weigh 1,602 kilograms, right?
Okay.
Okay, so that's the XC40. XC40 plug in hybrid. Hybrid, eh?
Yeah. Well, let's do the full electric, which is the P8, yeah.
XC40 P8 recharge weight. Weight unladen, 2.1 tons.
2.1 tons. So it's about 600 odd
kilos more. And it's got the exact same brake pads.
Yeah. So you're expecting the same brake pads to essentially do the same function. That's what
you
kind of get.
Yeah, but you're stopping 600 kilograms. So I'm wondering, in a brake test, between the XC40 P8 recharge and the XC40 ICE, we should actually do this. Am I sending everybody on a...
We're going down into a four-part...
Another four-part series. Like, so if we take the two cars and we go, you know, from, say, 60 k's an hour, and we jam on the brakes with both, right?
See what the results are.
Whether the XC40 P8 recharge actually takes longer to stop. Because my theory would be same brake pads, it would stop. It'll take a longer distance to stop.
Well, science will tell you yes. Mm. But that is a very extreme scenario where you're slamming on the brakes. One thing that the X40 PA does have is the regenerative braking. You know.
Which maybe then helps even when you slam on brakes. Because when you slam on brakes, the regenerative braking still kicks in, right?
I have no idea.
No, it does.
Okay.
It does.
Okay.
It does. It's still there. Because I can see it in my iPace. Even when I jam on brakes, the battery's
still charging.
The battery's still charging.
Huh. Well, let's maybe speak to our friends at Volvo again.
see if we can set it up. Exactly. Okay. So, what did you find?
So I think it's important that we take things further, and I went to go and look at one of the premier brake pad manufacturers in the world, Ferrodo. So they have an interesting product called the Ferrodo EcoFriction.
Now, Ferrodo has been for decades been like a premium brake pad.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the most widely used original
equipment brake pads.
Or brake pads, that you can get. So they have a product called the EcoFriction, which was developed over, took about 5 years to kind of develop this thing. And the sole purpose of them developing this is they realized that an EV and an ICE... two different applications in terms of how the how it functions and all the
how heavy the car is,
and the basis being weight. So they developed this completely fresh new parts, and according to their website, it covers about 95% of all electric car manufacturers right now.
They make brake pads for most of the OEMs.
Most of the OEMs,
okay, except Volvo.
Important to note, Volvo is not noted.
I guess.
Well, I'm going down this line, right? But they do. Jaguar is noted here. So we used the Jaguar in the first episode as kind of the contextual vehicle, and we saw that, why is it so much more expensive? It could be that.
Well, it wasn't really so much more expensive because we were using two totally different cars.
Totally different cars, you know.
So it wasn't fair.
To be fair. But, you know, this could be one of the factors. The technology in the iPace, for instance, may just be...
Well, no, it definitely is the case now, because if Ferrodo has now specifically engineered a brake pad for electric vehicles, right?
Including Jaguar,
which means that there is a difference in the technology.
Yes.
Because otherwise it wouldn't be...
But I don't know if it's... I don't want to just say it definitely, because I don't know if the iPace is included in that. But it's you know...
Well, Jaguar's on the list.
I mean, it's there. It's there.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you can't tell me that they would put Ferrodo into the Jaguar SVR and not into the iPace.
Yeah, because this is specific for electric vehicles. So it's safe to assume.
I would assume so. But it does tell me that, when companies design and develop new products, right, there's a lot of money that goes into that process.
Yeah.
And they've got to recoup that.
For sure.
So as a capitalist, you can't demand and supply will drive the price, of course. Mm. But at the outset, usually things are slightly more expensive because you've got to recover that research and development.
ultimately the consumer does pay less in terms of the barrier to entry, so the actual, you know, sticker value of the vehicle. But they'll then subsidize that later on with things like...
No, I'm saying it's out of the starting gates, the brake pads will be more expensive if they are specifically designed
for an
EV.
For sure.
And that R&D would have to be recovered. They probably see this as a separate division for Roto.
For sure. No, I mean, it's a whole new product.
Yes.
This equal friction. And, you know, on top of that, it's also like environmentally friendly, all those sort of things. But ultimately, in terms of function, specific for handling the weight of an EV. And I think that is almost the end of our...
No, XC40. XC40 challenge. Let's call it the stop challenge.
The stop challenge and see what the results are there.
Yeah. If we can get Volvo to agree to helping us, you know, prove.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. Does the regenerative braking actually slow the car down faster than if you jam on brakes in an ICE vehicle? Because an ICE vehicle... you would have to actually put it into a lower gear and drop the clutch and brake, which is like that process is, and especially with cars now not being manual, does the engine braking have the same effect as the regenerative braking?
Mm. Let's find out.
Be interested to find out.
Moving on. So there's this new phenomenon. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's called badge.
I don't know if it's a new phenomenon or an old phenomenon.
It's an old phenomenon. It's been around for as long as car manufacturers have been around, I think. As long as car manufacturers have owned other car manufacturers, I think it's been a thing. But it's called badge engineering. And essentially, this is what happens in the industry when essentially car manufacturers are trying to segment their vehicles into different parts of the market. Sometimes you can do that through a subsidiary. Sometimes you can do it through ownership of another manufacturer. There's different scenarios in which you can do this. The main thing about this is, well, the main purpose is that you don't have to go and design two different products, specifically if you do own another car manufacturer. One.
Well, I mean, didn't Nissan and Datsun do that? Because they became one company, they became Nissan, right?
Yeah.
But for a while they were manufacturing the Datsun.
As two different vehicles. Yeah.
With the same platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially, and then Ford and Mazda did that too.
Yes, there's a few examples that we, you know, in history that we can go down to. But now it's becoming a little more blatant, and I think a lot of consumers, most importantly, are getting a lot more wiser with regards to, hold on, I'm buying this vehicle here, but I could have gotten this one for either cheaper, or I couldn't gotten this one, you know, whatever the circumstances are. But essentially, I could have gotten an alternative which gave me the exact same thing.
Well, yes and no, because, like for instance. What are two vehicles that come to mind? Yeah.
So the most, I think the most popular one right now in South Africa specifically is the Toyota Starlet and the Suzuki Baleno.
Are they identical inside?
I think there's slight changes, but ultimately it's the exact same vehicle, both in the same factory, same sort of interior.
I would imagine that the interior is quite different.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is.
I think it's almost identical. Yeah. And that's where the problem is. And in terms of sales numbers, there's a big difference.
Because design plays a big part in pricing, right?
Yes.
And it's not down to, so, you know, I don't believe the input costs are the only thing that drives the ultimate selling price of a product.
Well, here's where, look, I'm a marketer through and through, and I believe in the power of marketing in terms of getting that price premium. And for instance, a Toyota, just by definition, it has a very, very strong perception of being, you know, reliable.
In this instance, is the Toyota more expensive?
I believe it is a little bit more expensive than the Baleno. And that's, you know, that's where for the consumer, where it becomes a bit of a, hey, you know, I could actually make a saving by going for the Suzuki in that scenario. And that's where the challenge is. But
all right, so the Toyota, a Starlet price... you know, is entry level 226,200, right?
Yeah.
And the Suzuki Baleno. So 226 versus, it's the same price, 225 for 900.
Mm. Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. So there they've kind of, there shouldn't be an issue there. It just depends on which badge you want to drive.
Which badge you kind of prefer.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, so if the interiors are identical, well, great. The prices are the same anyway.
Yeah. So why do manufacturers do this? Essentially, look, it's cheaper to just borrow a successful design. Borrow. Well,
use. borrow means you got to give back.
Okay, use a successful design. And look, it's going to save them a lot more costs. And consumers ultimately are always still winning because you do have choice and you can choose which one you prefer.
Okay, so let me put it to you this way. You're a BMW person, right?
Yes.
So if BMW and VW owned each other.
Okay.
One way or the other, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly you were driving a VW with a BMW badge.
Okay.
Okay. Or a BMW with VW a VW with a BMW badge.
Would I have a problem with the fact that
the prices are the same? But yeah, the VW looks like the BMW.
Look, that's when it goes down to brand preference. Mm. And I think I'll only have an issue if somebody tells me that the VW is like
being used, yeah.
Or better, or like, then I would be like, no, it's not.
Yeah. I think it's all about perception.
It is definitely. But you know, that's kind of, let's talk about if we're speaking on that exact, the Supra, the Toyota Supra was, I think the engine was developed by BMW and sent to Toyota, and they kind of tweaked it and tuned it the way they wanted to. But the interior is very much like a BMW.
Yeah.
And I love that car, despite it being...
Because the insides of BMW.
No, I think it's the best of both worlds. The Supra works in that scenario where we're sharing technology and we're sharing knowledge. Mm. And we're developing something that's... It's got kind of the guts of both, but it's something that's special now. Whereas in this scenario, no, it's the same thing in two different...
But there's a car that currently is on the road. It is the Subaru... what is it? What's the car called? And a Toyota. I think it's a Toyota and a Subaru. Which look almost identical.
Yeah.
It
could be the same scenario, yeah, that we're seeing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so you know, do you drive the Subaru or do you drive the Toyota when they look almost identical?
Well, let's talk about if you're a consumer, what are the implications of this? If you do buy a vehicle which is being rebadged as something else by another manufacturer, something to consider is the pricing of the parts, for instance, going back to the brake situations at the same price. In terms of your support, are you going to get the same support from this brand versus another one? There's different nuances with regards to ownership of this now model that's being shared by two OEMs, which, you know, is worth definitely looking and kind of investigating for yourself.
Well, I mean, I think platform sharing is a good thing because it lowers the cost of manufacture.
Yes.
I think the difference occurs when you have like the car's aesthetics and function identical. So for instance, the dash is exactly the same. The seats are exactly the same. The braking systems are exactly the same. You know, so the platform is one thing and the body is one thing, but you know, because they'll all have save money with crumple zones and crash testing and all that stuff. Mm. But then you kind of layer that with the design around the car.
But that's platform sharing. That's the second instance where you have platform sharing. So the X-Class and the Navara, for instance, where it was same platform, but the experience and the interior
are
and
different.
The infotainment. And
that I think is fine.
I think that's perfectly fine.
And if you have the other scenario where they actually look identical aesthetically, well, then the price points, I think like the Toyota and the Suzuki are the same. And then it's just a preference from a consumer point of view. Yeah. I don't see any problem with this.
No, definitely
you know,
not.
Journalists can moan as much as they want, but the manufacturers have got it right. The Toyota and the Suzuki's price points are the same.
Additionally, I think it brings down the cost to the consumer ultimately because now the consumer is getting the same sort of product. Let's say you like Suzuki, but you want a Toyota product or experience.
The reliability.
Or the reliability. You kind of get the same at a much less price for Toyota consumers as well as Suzuki consumers. So everyone ultimately wins here in terms of...
Well, the volume kind of makes the market a better place to be in.
It is good to note that it sometimes does not work. In some markets, one will do extensively better than the other one, just from a perception point of view or you know, so it doesn't always work.
Well then you haven't really you didn't lose. You didn't like have any R&D in creating a new car.
Yeah.
You just retract the Suzuki from the market and you know Toyota works. So you retract the Toyota because you know the Suzuki's working.
Yeah.
You haven't lost anything.
Yeah. But I can't understand why people are like, it's lazy and like...
It's not lazy. I don't think it's lazy. When Suzuki has built a brand, yeah, right, like they have,
yeah,
and Toyota decides, well, you know what, you know, let's share platforms, yeah, and as long as the quality standards are up there and the price point's the same, it's not lazy. It's clever marketing.
Yeah, just don't give me a different. Don't say
BMW versus VW.
Make sure that the experience is the same across both, and make sure that premium, that brand premium, is not significantly big. This is excluding obviously the after sales services and the custom experience that you get from one brand versus another. But other than that, you know, fair's fair, and if you're honest about it, then I think no one will be completely angry with you. Moving on. So it's been a while since I've asked you a question from Ask Auto Trader. So I found an interesting one which I hope you could help me get to the bottom of. But essentially Kasim, if you cross out Kasim, asked, what should I do when I found out the vehicle I bought is 7 years older than advertised? So this gentleman bought this vehicle and it was advertised as a 2007 model car. They sent it back to the dealership because they were experiencing some issues with it after they bought it. And they're like, what's going on here? And essentially he sent it back to the manufacturer, who came back to him and told him that this car is actually a 2000 model and not actually a 2007 model. And when he asked for the paperwork, he got some of the paperwork and he just was unsure if it was authentic. But from the manufacturer, it was confirmed already that it was old. What does he do in that scenario?
Well, I mean, so we've got to take one thing into account here. And that is year of manufacture versus year of first registration. There can be a difference.
Yes.
Okay. So I buy a 2022 car.
Doesn't mean it was
in November or December, but it's only registered
in January.
In January.
Yeah.
Right.
Then it's
2022. Or I go into the dealership and this thing is standing on the floor. It's brand new. Year of manufacture is last year or even the year before. Okay. But it's for your first registration is 2 years later. Right. Now, those instances can occur. They don't occur very often, but they can occur. I would imagine that 7 years, a little bit of a long
window.
It's
kind of a stretch, yeah.
It's a very, very, yeah, it's a stretch to believe that a car would stand brand new unless it's bubble wrapped or something. And its first year of registration is 2007, right? So the first thing I would do if I was a consumer is check year of manufacture and year of first registration.
Okay.
Right? Because you could pick up something there.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the consumer, and we keep saying, do your research. Unfortunately, you missed this.
Yeah.
Because you didn't do your research properly. Right? Now, it could be that the dealer that sold it fraudulently misrepresented it.
Okay.
And I would have to, you know, look at the ads, which we're not going to do, you know, in this particular show, because you know we don't have access to what the ad actually looked like and what the scenario was, we don't know.
We don't know all the details.
So did the dealer fraudulently misrepresent the car? Because then there could be possible fraud at play there.
Okay.
But the chances of that are also low. But it could happen. It could happen. You don't know, right?
Yeah.
So the best way to kind of approach this is really to go to the ombudsman and to go and like they're a good middle mediator, arbitrator, you know, kind of somebody that will look at the case. You know, don't think the ombudsman is just there for the side of the consumer. The ombudsman is there on the side of the right. They're not there. Like they're not going to take a rubbish story and just kind of like make the consumer right necessarily.
Yeah.
They're going to look for the detail and they're going to look for, you know, what was the actual scenario. Yeah. So I would go to the ombudsman and lodge a claim against the seller.
Yeah.
Right. Then the truth will begin to surface.
Yeah.
And then you can figure out where this all went wrong. You know, so that's what I would do. You know, I mean, ultimately, I suppose you could chat to a lawyer.
Yeah.
But that's kind of spending money before you really find out the underlying scenario. Issue, yeah. I wouldn't go that far initially.
How would one avoid this scenario altogether at the very beginning?
Find out year of manufacture.
Yeah.
Ask for the proof of, you know, when was this car made?
Mm.
When was it imported? Like, there has to be documentation around that car and when it was made and when it was imported, or either or. And then your first year registration. Sometimes there's a subtle difference.
Slight difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically all the time we have for. Thank you so much, George, for another episode.
Go Leclerc.